Mr. Bagnall, isn't it, Mr. Flynn?
Yes.
Yes, that's his name.
Yes, well, we shall see.
Yes.
But I have no doubt in my mind that we shall get it published.
Yes.
But we may have to be patient a little while.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, darling. You've put so much in.
What should we talk about?
Well, I thought I'd leave the initiative to you today.
That's a tall order.
Oh, it's fit, sir. Well, supposing, say we were going for, you were taking me for a walk in your strata of the spirit world, could you tell me what I should be likely to see and experience on the way? You were always a wonderful guide, you see.
Well, I suppose one of the first joys, at least it was something that impressed me very much, would be the realization that there was no effort nor feeling of tiredness.
Yes.
Which can so often destroy, especially as one is getting older on earth, many of the pleasures. Here there's that tremendous feeling of well-being, of lightness. One is conscious, of course, of the walking, that is, one's feet touching the ground.
Really?
And the consciousness of movement.
Yes.
But there's no feeling of exertion or tiredness. One doesn't feel the necessity of having to ease up and sort of sit down and wait until you feel refreshed to go ahead. Of course, one does sit down and one does make the effort, in a sense, to achieve or to do, but it's not the wearisome thing that it can be on earth. I mean, for instance, you don't sit down because you are tired.
No.
You sit down because perhaps you've come across some vista which you want to gaze upon and take in, and by so doing, of course, that in itself is an inspiration, and not that one needs, as I've already said, refreshing, but one takes from everything here something which in itself is a great balm, and it's of course especially so in the early days or early stages of coming here, one's very conscious not only of the beauty all around one, but one is very aware that it is in some way, which at first one doesn't perhaps realize or understand fully, but one is conscious of that it is having an effect.
I see.
In other words, for instance, you have someone who comes, and they've been here a very short time, they're still bringing with them very much the old mentality and the old thought forces, and their reactions are they're so overwhelmed by what they see that it takes from them much of the old way of thinking, the old depression that is still carried over, because after all, as I've often said, a person is, in many respects, very much the same on arrival here as they were on earth in their outlook. They don't suddenly change, they don't suddenly see differently, or for that matter, even act differently. But the calming influence of life here, the feeling of complete restfulness, of peacefulness, of tranquility and beauty, the complete and absolute wonder of everything that constitutes life here, gradually changes the individual to such an extent that they do feel completely a different person.
Yes. Yes,
and therefore, you see, when you are going on a journey, or you are going out, as you would say, in earth parlance of walk, you would be assimilating all that you see. And that would be all the time revitalizing you, giving you a new conception of life, giving you a greater inner strength, giving you the feeling that you yourself were being affected in yes. such a way that you became part of what you were conscious of, what you were experiencing. In other words, you would lose the strangeness and the feeling of even of wonder, in a sense. You begin to accept it as natural, which it is, surrounding and condition of life, and you would begin to, in consequence, feel that you had become a changed person. In other words, what really happens with an individual when they first come here is the gradual assimilation of all that is around and about one. One feels gradually being drawn, as it were, into it and becoming part of it. In other words, you are feeling that contentment that one would have of home, being surrounded by conditions which are peaceful and serene and which are gradually becoming more and more natural to you. Because the first experience, of course, for the average person is tremendous, that they're overwhelmed and they cannot fully understand or realize. But it is this influence that one is aware of that begins, shall we say, the change within oneself.
Yes.
Well, I suppose in the first instance, after the first initial shock of passing, and then gradually assimilating all that is around and about one, there comes the sort of feeling of peace and contentment, and then there comes this sort of looking into oneself. One, as it were, is able to see oneself the first time, completely and absolutely. One is conscious of all that has transpired, and one can, and one does, of course, in the environment in which one finds oneself, reflect a great deal on the past. And as one reflects and thinks back, one becomes conscious of all that one has either achieved or indeed what one has failed in. And one also attracts, in a most extraordinary way, all numbers of people that come along that are drawn by our thoughts. And we are then, as it were, in a reflective state, thinking back in time and on the past, drawing to us, through those thoughts, individuals that have played a part in our lives, who come along because of our consciousness of them. We become conscious of them. In other words, as we think of them, think of the past, so they are drawn to us, and they, in turn, because of their greater knowledge and experience, are able to help us and advise us. Many people, indeed, do, when they first come here, find that in the process of passing through your world to this, are attracting various people who played an important part in their lives. For instance, if there's very great love, a great feeling of oneness with a person who's gone before, that person automatically is conscious of one's thoughts and draws close to one at the point of death and enables us to make the change more easily, more naturally. And we awaken, invariably, after losing consciousness on earth, in a natural surrounding of great beauty. It may be, for instance, a very beautiful garden, which quite often it can and is, often of a friend or someone that we have loved, who's taken a great personal interest in us. And as we become conscious of our new surroundings, we become conscious of the love and the help that has been thrown out to us and given to us by I, this particular person, or persons, as the case may be. And we're never, for instance, in the first instance of coming here alone. There's no feeling of loneliness. There's no feeling of being left to one's own devices, having to find out for oneself. There's always souls, loving souls, waiting to greet us and to help us and to explain things to us. And although it may sound odd, it may well be that on first beginning to realize one's new surroundings, one may still feel the pull of the earth or the old ideas which were common to one and the needs that were common to the physical body still have to some extent some power. And it may well be, for instance, that you may desire some refreshment. Not that you physically, in a sense, or psychically, or in any way really need it, but because your mind works in such a way that you assume that it's necessary.
I should want a nice cup of China tea, of course.
Well, that's exactly what I'm really getting. You see, I'm very aware of the fact there must be lots of people on your side who, listening to my saying this or reading it in a book, will find it a little difficult to understand and perhaps even assume that it's rather amusing. But then again, whatever conception a person may have previously of life after death, what I'm saying to you is no more amusing or strange than many of the other things that people have assumed. After all, we don't sit on clouds, we don't play harps.
No harps, darling.
Not in the sense as sometimes it's thought or understood. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean, we have musical instruments, obviously, and many different kinds of instruments, and there are people who love the harp and play the harp, but there is none of this rather peculiar idea of, well, people entering into a sort of extraordinary world in which there's a god on a great throne with a great book with your name and so on, waiting to judge you and all that. Of course, that is an old-fashioned idea which probably died out a long time ago anyway, thank goodness. What I'm trying to say is that our world is a real world, a very natural world. And after all, one must remember that what constitutes any world for any individual must be what they themselves have, in a sense, created. Because although there may be preconceived ideas that this world, in a sense, has been created not by men but by God, it cannot alter the fact that man himself, by his thoughts, creates the environment and the condition of his life, your world today. It's true that fundamentally you are living in a world which was constructed before man himself began to have life or consciousness. But once man became conscious, once man began to have life, once he began to form ideas and experiment and so on, he began to create the kind of world in which he found himself. Apart from nature itself, which of course exists here just the same, the state of our being, or the state of our existence, according to whatever sphere we may be upon, is entirely due to the mind and the outlook and thought of the individuals who inhabit it.
Yes, naturally.
And so once people can realize that you go into or enter into a state of being which has been created by the thoughts of individuals who have gone before, it is their state of mind which creates the atmosphere or the condition of life in which one finds oneself. And therefore, naturally, when you first enter into it, you have to gradually adjust yourself and enter into the idea, if I can put it like that, of the existence in which you now inhabit or in which you find yourself. And many people gradually have to discard many of the old theories, many of the old ideas, particularly religious ones, and accept the realization that they are in a world which is a natural world, in which man lives naturally, and in which he himself is all the time creating. We have all manner of places, all manner of conditions, of ways of life, you might say. On the very lower spheres you have a semblance of life which is very artificial and very much a reflection of the earth. Mm-hmm. Then again you have other spheres further removed where people by their very thoughts and actions have altered and changed the condition of their life, and in consequence they live an entirely different existence and a much more peaceful and happy one than those in lower spheres. And so you go on, and as you are gradually evolving and developing, so not only do you change, but your environment changes.
Yes.
Because you are entering into a new state of being which you yourself have made possible. But fundamentally, nature, and I refer here, of course, to nature from the point of view of trees and flowers and birds and so on,
yes,
which does exist, is always beautiful.
Yes, and as we went along with our walk, would we see some wild animals as well as the...
Well, there are no such things here as wild animals. From the point of view of an animal being wild, if by that you mean that they live in a natural way and are not in any way tamed by man, I suppose you can say wild in the sense that they live a natural existence in their own habitation. But
I brought over a wonderful picture of badgers the other night. They were clear and sparkling and all the stripes. I really had been there amongst these creatures. I remember you used to like badgers.
Yes, very much so. What I'm trying to convey here is that the wildlife, if I use that expression, is no longer wild. I'm trying to say is that when on Earth, very few people realize that the animal kingdom, for instance, is able to understand much more than man credits it possible. For instance, an animal is conscious of thought forces. And over here, because the animals have a freedom to roam and to enjoy their existence, there is no fear in their makeup. For instance, they don't fear one another or fear man, since it isn't necessary to eat, and they don't have the need to kill. You see, the whole point is that their mental development, although not on the higher level of man, is sufficient for them to live and to dwell in peace, and there is no fear among the animals. Animals, vast creatures, some, live in their own environment with great peace and contentment, and a man could walk up to them and they wouldn't be harmed at all.
You must be in your element, darling, because you did love animal life so much.
I adore all forms of animal life, but I cannot help but feel, even as I'm talking to you now, that there are many people who, if they read a book in which you put this down, will find it difficult to understand. And what I'm trying very hard to convey here is that you must not try to picturize or to visualize my explanations or the conception of life that I'm trying to convey in a material sense. And I realize this is the main difficulty because obviously it's very difficult and almost impossible to understand something of a spiritual nature in a material manner. Because when I talk about different environments, different conditions of life, they're so vast that the mind cannot comprehend them. I mean, you may think of your world as so vast a place. When you think of the millions of peoples that live in the, and have their way of life, even though for only for a short time, but new generations coming and generations dying off. But our world, I mean, one's fear of our world probably is a million times greater than your world.
Really? It must be very vast.
Well, it is so vast that, yes, that one cannot comprehend it. I mean, we've talked about nature, we've talked about the vastness of this life, and we've talked about the scenery that one may see, but you must remember too that there is every possible conceivable type of scenery and many other forms of nature which man has never witnessed over here.
Yes, I suppose much more developed.
There are great forests, great lakes, great mountains. We have great... In fact, one could go as far as to say that everything here is on a vaster, greater scale. I've seen flowers, as tall as trees.
Yes.
Forests of flowers. And it's...
Will the trees be larger in proportion then?
Are some they? Are, yes, yes, some are.
Yes.
You see, it's so variable that one can hardly begin to describe it. One can enter into, if you like, a sort of forest of flowers.
Yes.
Of every hue.
That. Yes.
And you could see, looking upwards, you could see the petals, enormous and beautiful, giving forth a radiance and a light which everywhere you go, it's almost as if you could almost, in a sense, be in a vast cathedral with a roof of all colours and the light shining through.
Oh, wonderful.
You see, everything here is so tremendous and so vast in its conception that words are such inadequate things to depict and describe something for which there are no words.
Yeah. And I suppose as we walked along we might see, say, an art gallery or a museum or...
Oh, yes. There are many great galleries, many great places where works of art and also, of course, replicas of earthly works of art, if they've been truly great works of art, there is a spiritual counterpart which in itself is more beautiful than the earthly original. And great artists still create and great designers still design. Here you will find every form of architecture that you could possibly imagine. And of course there are peoples who still dress in a manner which appeals to them, which they may consider is more suitable for them, or maybe that they feel more at home or more rested, if I can use such an expression. I mean, for instance, you have every form of wearing apparel.
Yes.
And people do create and do design, architects draw, and great buildings are erected.
I think my artist uncle must be very happy. Uncle Will, the artist.
I'm sure he is. Yes. And I have seen him from time to time.
Yes, do give him my special love.
I will. Mm-hmm. Do you know, sometimes when you are in your sleep, you come here and you do witness and you do experience a lot of things. You may not be conscious of them or aware of them, particularly on awaking, but you do have these experiences. And I think occasionally you remember a little, you have a little glimmer, as it were.
Yes. I think the shock of returning to the body rather, you know, it sort of shatters the...
Oh, yes, I'm sure. And of course, there again, if you've had a vividly experienced time here, which has been so happy that the brain itself cannot retain it, it cannot hold it. because in a sense the brain cannot receive certain things outside its normal range.
Yes, of course. Yes.
But often we're together.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Often we visit people and places. And you know, I'm looking forward so much to the time when you join me.
Yes.
Because I'm sure that with the knowledge that you now possess and the experience that you've had, when the time comes, it'll be so simple, so easy. There'll be none of this, as there is with some, of fighting and holding back. You know, there are numbers of people who do not immediately grasp the significance and the immensity of all this. There are some, of course, who even live in a kind of half world and are very much nearer to Earth than they are here, and live, I suppose, in a kind of an earthbound state.
Yes. Perhaps some of them want to come back to Earth,
well,
do they?
Well, of course, I'm sure a lot of them do, and a lot of them are very concerned with Earth and people they know and love on Earth, and very often they are earthbound from the point of view that they are more interested in Earth, and they influence and get a great satisfaction out of influencing other people on Earth, sometimes to do things which are very bad, for instance. Mm-hmm. For a person who's lived in a very material sense and thinks only materially and is unconcerned about the feelings and the thoughts of others and lives so selfishly and ruthlessly, often those people are very earthbound.
Yes.
And sometimes it's very difficult to help them. We have whole groups of souls here that come back to Earth with the idea of assisting and helping the earthbound ones and relieving often indeed the tension that is created by these souls on certain peoples.
Yes.
You know, there are lots of people in your world who are in mental hospitals who are in themselves not ill, but are mentally influenced by entities who are very earthbound.
Yes, I remember you. I've got a very good recording of your account of that. The next time, darling, could we talk about perhaps children in your world?
Yes, of course.
I've always been very fond of them.
There are lots and lots and lots of things I want to discuss with you.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, there are many. It's so interesting. I wish I could explain this.
And dare we go into reincarnation, or would it be too heated?
No, why should it be
heated? Oh, people always get worked up if you start talking about reincarnation.
Well, I think that a lot of people get worked up about something because they don't really know anything about it.
Oh, they can't bear it. Coming back here.
They don't like the idea.
No, they don't.
But then again, when one realizes that your life on Earth, which often seems so long, is infinitesimal in time itself, and that it may well be that a person chooses to come back to do a certain work which may be beneficial to others. In other words, it's a kind of sacrifice of some to come back to serve humanity. And it is a way of retribution. It's a way of opening up for themselves indirectly a way of life. It's good sometimes.
I see, yes. But there's no compulsion about it.
Not in many instances, but some, yes. But the vast majority of people choose to come back, and invariably it's for a definite purpose, either to serve or to help in some way, or because the only way that they can reach a certain state of evolution is to return to Earth and learn lessons which they neglected to learn previously or refused.
I see.
If a person has lived a very material, selfish existence, it may well be that it's necessary for them to return.
Mm-hmm.
One must experience certain things on Earth before one can hope to achieve or to progress.
Yes, I quite see that. But wouldn't I, for instance, be missing you, supposing you decide to come back before I've got over there?
Well, for one thing, I'm sure I shall not do that.
Oh, good.
And secondly, time itself is so different to people's vision of it or realization of it on Earth.
Yes.
We may be here, or I may, or some other person for that matter, may be here centuries, as you term time, before they decide to reincarnate or do reincarnate. It may well be that the time is not ripe.
yes.
that they should return. Most of the great seers and teachers and the old souls are old souls from the point of view they've been reincarnated many times.
Yes.
I don't think anyone need fear or worry that, because in every form, in every existence, no matter what form it may take, it is of real value. I think the whole point is that so many people have such a restricted idea of what it all means when we talk about reincarnation.
Yes.
There's no need to fear it. We must all remember it's essential to gain knowledge and experience that will benefit us in our progress through time until such time as we evolve sufficiently to enter into an environment or condition of life which is far removed from material thought and material things. We have to reach a stage of evolution where we can go forward without having to look back. And of course, so many people, on their first arriving here, cannot fail but keep looking back because they haven't evolved sufficiently. And sometimes it isn't just a matter of having to look back to assess the past and assess oneself or help oneself in one's unfoldment and development in consequence. Sometimes it's necessary to go back.
Yes.
But it's a big story, and I know that there are many points which need clearing up and clarifying, and there are many things that people will not understand even if we do our best to explain it. You know, a great deal depends upon the individual outlook, how much a person is prepared to give of themselves, and how strong they are in character to be able to cast off preconceived strong ideas which are barriers. It takes courage to give up something which you may have held on to for a long time.
Yes.
Even though you may not altogether feel happy or sure about it, it's been something that's meant something and you've clung to it. But the real progress starts when a person can have the courage to go forward seeking truth and not being afraid en route to discard things which he begins to realize are no longer valid and no longer necessary. Mm-hmm. You must be prepared for sacrifices if you want to progress.
Yes. Well, I'm going to see Jessie now. I'm going to have tea with her, dear. Do you remember Jessie Foster?
Very well, yes.
Do you see Will? Sir William
Foster? From time to time, yes. Mm-hmm. He's getting on very well and is very happy.
Good.
And perhaps one day she may be persuaded to come.
I wonder. I think she's interested, but she hasn't gone as far as that yet.
I think she's a little afraid.
Yes.
Uncertain.
Yes.
And I don't blame her. I understand. We must always be tolerant and patient and give out love wherever we can. And if we can help, let us do all we can to help. Give her my blessings.
I will.
All my love to you, I must go.
Yes, thank you. It's been a wonderful talk, hasn't it, Mr. Flint?
Excellent.